Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July 13th, 2000. In the fireside room this afternoon, Larry Rasmussen is holding session 2003. The session is called Deep Christian Traditions as Earth's Faith, African Association of Earthkeeping Churches. Let's listen in.
Now, these two folks, Aztrek and AAEC, should not be getting along with one another. Because if you chose to join the African Independent Churches, that's because you said no to traditional Shona ancestor veneration religion. You said, you say in Jesus Christ there is no other name under heaven whereby you must be saved, and I make my decision for Jesus Christ. And they have a very strong Christology. So they shouldn't be getting along. When you leave, when you become a Christian, what you leave behind is the is shown a religion. But they do. They're their own little interfaith ecumenical organization, and they work together, and the reason is survival. They must work together if they are going to make it on these lands that in which they find themselves. Now I want to talk a little bit about those lands. But just to say that it's really quite remarkable, because when the AAEC, when you have Eucharist, when you have communion, if it's tree planting time, you plant trees. And you have a liturgy that goes through the bread and wine and the planting of trees. It's all one sacrament. Or if it's time to dedicate seeds, you dedicate seeds. Or if it's harvest time, you have a feast of booths. And this is all ritualized, and it's all both Christian and Shona. And now the members of Aztrek come to the tree planting Eucharists. And come to the harvest of booths, the harvest of booths, taking in the first fruits. Likewise, once a year, the members of Aztrek have to go to the shrine, and there's a sacred shrine that's near the grave, as is always ironic, of Cecil John Rhodes, who was the one that took all their land from them. That's where the shrine is. And they have to present to the ancestors, so actually they're presenting it to Mwari, the high god of Shona religion, their plan for the year. How many trees are they going to plant, for example? And there's an all-night preparation to meet Mwari and talk to Mwari. Mwari always speaks out of a cave, and Mwari speaks as an old woman. They know it's an old woman who's in there. And she speaks in the accent of an earlier kingdom of Shona, prior to Cecil John Rhodes, back when this land was our land. All right? So the Christians are invited along in the pilgrimage to the shrine and participate in the whole thing as a part of this interfaith or ecumenical work together. So even though there is theologically they're at odds with one another, and the Christians have said no to Shona religion and the traditional Shona, but not to Shona culture, and the Shona keepers of Shona religion have said no to Christianity, they nonetheless carry out their interfaith work, and they do it together. Now what they say they're doing, and what they're after, is regaining the lost lands and reclothing the earth. The lands were lost, and this is an example of what, in my larger project, I call drawing on the deep tradition of prophetic and liberative practices. Because that concern about the land and redeeming the land, etc., is a Hebrew Bible. It's an Old Testament theme through and through. Everything is about the people and the land. Christians have largely forgotten that, but it's everywhere in the Old Testament. because it's the land that's redeemed together with the people. And when you're in exile, you're in exile from the land. That's really being lost. And there's nothing you pray for more than next year in Jerusalem. So this focus on the land is a part of their faith as Christians. And their land was lost three different ways and at three different times. In Zimbabwe, there have been two wars that have been fought over the land. One was 1890 and 1891, which was the time of the land grab by the Brits. And then the second war fought over the land was 1964 to 1980, which was a war of independence that moved Rhodesia to Zimbabwe. Successful in attaining political independence, Mugabe versus Ian Smith. Okay? But the economic issues were not solved with that war. And the first one, the Brits won, that was in 1890. Cecil John Rhodes, actually he hoodwinked the Mbadele king into signing off the land. There's a whole issue here, because in African culture you don't own land. You don't think of land. You're a part of the land. The land is a part of you. So these deals with the whites, the Zimbabweans thought they were sharing the land and not selling it, because you can't really sell land. But there were some serious tribal conflicts, and the Shona and the Mbeli were enemies of one another. And the Mbeli king had the audacity not only to make a deal with Cecil John Rhodes about sharing the land there, but he signed off the Shona land to Cecil John Rhodes as well, without, of course, getting permission from the Shona. Actually, Rhodes himself had gone in search of new lands. He'd come from South Africa. So there was this relatively easy acquisition of land, except when they figured out what was actually happening, and namely British settlers were saying, "This is now our land, you can't be here." Then there was this war which they lost. And there was a division of lands at that time into the commercial lands of the British settlers and then the communal lands that the Africans then were left with. And the communal lands were, of course, the worst lands, and the commercial lands were the best lands for the crops. And it remains that way in Zimbabwe, it remains that way in South Africa, and land issues continue to be a huge issue. And in Zimbabwe right now, ex-combatants from the War of Independence are squatters on white Zimbabwean farmlands, and that's what the present-day issue is about. Okay, the lands were lost to the Brits first, so when they say regaining the lost lands is the church's mission and reclothing the earth, that's what's meant in the first place. Second place, the lands were lost to the Mugabe government. That is to say, land reform was not carried out once Mugabe got into power. And he now has taken the side of the squatters, but in the meantime, you have a very corrupt government in Mugabe and a lot of opposition to it by black Zimbabweans who want him out of there, and the opposition party scored hugely in the election a few weeks ago. So it's a very tense situation over the land. Thirdly, the land was lost to land degradation on the part of the communal lands, where all these people somehow had to make a go of it. Their other alternative is to work on the commercial lands for white Zimbabwean farmers, or try to find some jobs in the city. But if you weren't going to work on the farm, on the lands, or you weren't going to go in the city, or if you were unsuccessful in the city, then you got to make a go of it on the communal land. And the result of that was a lot of environmental degradation on those communal lands and granite hills of southern Zimbabwe. So when they talk about regaining the lost lands and reclothing the earth is taking care of the communal lands as a matter of survival. And they talk about it as the War of the Trees. It's a continuation of independence. Only we're now winning the war by reforestation, by water reclamation, by preventing erosion, by conserving wildlife, etc. Okay, I think the only other thing I need to really tell you to understand something of the theology that's back of this is something about, well, two things really. One, to tell you how the African thinking about God and the people and the land and about God and people and the rest of nature differs from what has been dominant in the West. And then I'll do that in two parts. One is just to name some differences that have been, or name some elements that have been true for us in the West. And then secondly, to say something about African ways of seeing things, or at least Shona ways of seeing things, since there's a great deal of diversity across Southern Africa, not to say Africa as a whole. Let me just name how dominant Western European Christianity has thought about the relationship of God, nature, and including people, and then contrast that with what stands behind these folks' way of looking at things. In much of Western habits of mind and thought, God is separated from nature in much Christian thought. Transcendence, the transcendence of God, the otherness of God, the removed character of God, the distanced distanced nature of God. The transcendence is emphasized over immanence, over God's presence and power in, with, and under everything in the community of life, and even every stone. So transcendence is emphasized over immanence, and in most Western thought, revelation happens in history as something separate from nature. And history is seen as the realm of human affairs, and nature is a kind of stage or setting for that. Now, that wouldn't make any sense to an African. It does make sense for us. And Protestant strains interpret the sovereignty of God and the authority of Scripture and human vocation itself in ways that distanced God, Scripture, and human vocation, distanced all of them from nature. In fact, in severe Protestant ways, there was a distrust of nature as a source of the revelation of God, and you chose Scripture over nature, if you even granted nature being a book of revelation. Now, it's not true of all, and on tomorrow we'll see a whole tradition of Celtic Christianity that says something entirely different. Okay, so God is separated from nature in much Christian thought, but not in African Christian thought. Humanity is separated from nature in much Christian thought, as well as in predominant streams of Western secular philosophy. Humankind alone is said to be created in the image of God. These folks see all creation in the image of God. And you don't single out human beings. Humankind is set in a commanding position vis-a-vis the rest of nature. These folks don't see it that way. That's why the land is so important. You're part of it. It is part of you. It isn't one over the other. Humanity's consolation in the West seems to be in its uniqueness. That is, in being alone as a distinctive creation. It's not true in their Christianity. Thirdly, I mean, I'll just finish with this. Redemption in the West, the dominant theologies, not all of them, has been sundered from creation so that nature becomes the backdrop for the drama of human salvation. Whereas these folks understand redemption to be the redemption of all of creation. I could give you an interesting example of that. I went along with the little faculty that travels to the villages to do theological education. You can't ask the people studying to be pastors and catechists to leave their villages to come off to a residential seminary somewhere. They're peasant farmers. And you can't, I mean, your livelihood depends on taking care of the crop. So that only means that the faculty's got to go to the students. So the students gather in the villages and the faculty travels in a Land Rover. There are four subjects. There's biblical study, there's church history and culture, there's homiletics, preaching, and there's ecological theology. I teach at what is on everybody's short list as one of the best theological seminaries in the world, and I couldn't get my faculty to teach eco-theology as the theology, but you can in Southern Zimbabwe. And I just want to read a verbatim item from this little exchange when Bishop Miranda, who's written a little text on eco-theology for them, had the session. Now the education happens pretty much rote. The students are given an article. They don't have money for books, but they have enough money to Xerox an article. So they get an article 1 week, and then they're expected to answer questions on the article the next week. And there are right answers and there are wrong answers, etc. Especially for Bishop Miranda. Okay. I won't go through the church history and Bible one. I'm just the ones on the session on eco-theology. Answer to the question about the relationship of about salvation. What did we used to think in the African independent churches? Answer: we used to think that salvation was for people only, that Jesus died for us. What do we now believe? We now believe that Jesus died for the whole creation. We consider that Jesus became the sacrifice for all and that it's no longer necessary to sacrifice animals or anything else for the healing of creation. Question: why do people cut down trees? Answer: the population explosion is one reason why we take too many trees. It's also for development. We have to have power lines placed for schools, other buildings, mines, more fields. This disturbs the whole system. Question: what should we do? Answer: smaller families. Then there's an animated discussion about why there are large families and so many kids. They say we got to have a lot of kids for labor for the land, take care of the elders, carry out new projects. We got an oil press, we got a big polter project. Who's going to do it? Yet when all these reasons have been given, many also said we should still have smaller families, and we should invest in the Lord's Acre. The Lord's Acre is the name they give to the village forest. that they plant for firewood. They call it the Lord's Acre. Okay, we should invest in the Lord's Acre and support cultural traditions that preserve trees and the land. Question, how are we going to distinguish ourselves as Christians? Answer, plant trees. Teach people how to conserve nature, reclaim our gullies, teach people how to save animals, don't kill the small fish in the process of netting bigger ones, develop a conscience that accuses us when we trample nature. And many of them said this, love nature as a revelation of the Holy Spirit, and teach reconciliation with God as our reconciliation with nature. Wow. Okay, assignment from the bishop. Find out the cost of development. Everybody talks development. Find out the cost of development to nature in our area. Where are the buildings placed? What happens to nature here? And secondly, read the poem that you were given and come prepared to discuss it. There you are. So that was the little session on eco-theology. Okay, now the last thing before showing you, some of the photos, and then we'll have time for a discussion. I want to say just a little bit about African cosmology, African way of seeing things, and I'm passing along actually one of my students' articles, Akintunde Akinada, who is from Nigeria. But what he says, I think, generalizes quite well. And I'll just read you a paragraph from his article called An African Reflection on Eco-Justice. African people generally conceive the entire cosmos as a divine creation. The whole universe is divine, or is sacred. Nature is fraught with sacred significance. Africans believe that both humankind and the whole creation were made in the image of God, and the entire creative process is envisioned as the veritable autobiography of God. This is a wonderful notion, that the cosmos and the evolution of the cosmos is a way to tell God's story. This is God's autobiography. In that sense, the Mary Knoll Ecological Sanctuary is, in their own way, out of the Catholic sacramental tradition and their 14 stations, also saying, we're talking about the autobiography of God. The splendor of the divine is felt in the radiant sun, in the flowing stream of water, in curvaceous rocks, in lush forests, and in the whole effervescence of nature. Creation testifies to God's radiance, love, and effulgence. God's glory is manifest in nature, and it carries the imprint of the Creator's purpose. The omnipresence of God is taken for granted by African peoples. The African people of Ghana affirm that if you want to speak to God, speak to the winds. So this is Old Testament stuff, too. You know, in the Old Testament, in Hebrew, the word for breath that you breathe, ruach, and the word for the breeze that blows down the valley, and the word for God as spirit is the same. It's exactly the same word. And you don't know which you're talking about, except in context. So there's that kind of, this is another said differently. It's emphasizing the immanence of God rather than the transcendence, the power and presence of God, as Luther said, in, with, and under all that is created. So to speak about creation is to speak about God. To speak about God is to speak about creation. Now that is nicely illustrated in the church architecture that I mentioned earlier, but I'm going to show you just a couple pictures from South Africa and the Kanya program. Zimbabwe is in southern Africa. It's a landlocked country, and Mozambique sits between it and the ocean. But south of Zimbabwe is South Africa. And there's a rural development project of the Methodist Church called the Kanya Program. The Tri-Circle Church in the tank of baptism. I'll just see if I can find my photos now, because you don't want me to show you all of them. This is the traditional housing. Can you see the rondavels? okay? The rendezvous, the round, rather large, they're rather spacious.
What is the white part, the stucco?
Yeah, it's just stucco. It's a stucco. It's a mud and wood. It's mud and stick, and then whitewash, and then the thatch.
Thatch. Is there a dirt floor?
Yes, and a dirt floor. Mm-hmm. There isn't electricity here, but there is in a lot of places. Now, these three rendezvous are on the training, are at the training center of the Kanya program. So they're for staff. They're going to build a church there as a part of this. It's a Methodist church, and it will replace this one. I just want you to notice the architecture of that church, okay?
Ooh, where'd they get that idea?
Well, yes, it's a rectangle, and it's not a rendezvous, all right? And you come in, and the pews are placed like this, and then the altar is at the end, so you're looking at the minister up there, and the folks sit with their backs to one another, which they never do in their rendezvous. Now, I have to also tell you that just because it's round, and because God is identified with creation, doesn't mean that there aren't all kinds of dualisms. And this is a very patriarchal society. There is not equality between men and women. Sometimes you get sort of interesting responses, though, on the part of the women who are getting very uppity. And I came there. Well, I have to tell you about one of my faux pas, first in Zimbabwe, and then I'll tell you about something better here. But when I went, I knew that one always exchanges greetings and exchanges gifts. You bring greetings not from yourself only, but from your community. And you greet their community and you bring something for their community. So I took a nice print of a picture that hangs in the congregation that I belong to in Manhattan, and that's what this is. It's actually a triptych. You can't see the details, but it's Mary and Jesus having just come down from the cross, and there's a woman on the left and there's a woman on the right in addition to Mary in the center. So it's three women and Jesus. In Zimbabwe, I met the bishop before going to the worship service, and I said, I have a gift that I would like to present to the community in worship today and bring them greetings from my congregation. And he said, well, do you mind if I ask what it is? And I said, no, I'll show you. Here, it's this print. And he says, I think we have a problem. The people are the church, and the church is the people, and we don't have walls. Where are we going to put this? We worship outside or under a canopy, you know, protect us from the hot sun. Here am I, professor at a seminary who's been saying for 30 years of teaching, people is the church is the people. Don't confuse it with the building. I'm teaching ecology and ethics. It never occurred to me they'd have a church without walls, and that sacred space would be outside instead of inside. So, we did have a problem. However, it went up in the office of Zircon.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now, when I presented the same thing to the women, not to the women, to the whole congregation, but afterwards the women were chosen to respond to the presentation. They were picked out, three of them. And this one on the left, this is the uniform, if you will, of the women, Methodist women's organization. And this woman on the left said, she said, when I saw that painting, I was just so taken aback. You see, God needs us women because things don't go well for God, and somebody's got to stand by God on those days. Then she went on to list all the reasons why women were utterly indispensable, and now they are utterly indispensable to God. It was great. Okay, let me see if I can find what I was actually looking for. I want to show you the new church, which is just being built now, as a matter of fact, as we speak. And it's being built at the training center, and it's a model for others in the villages, and one of them is being built in the village. So when I left, nothing had started except the making of the mud brick. But I have the plans. Can you see the architectural plans? Okay.
Is that three circles?
Yeah, three circles. Is that better?
And they overlap?
Yeah, they overlap. I'll explain them. I just want you to see that there are three rendezvous there. Mm-hmm. You saw three rendezvous separated in the first picture. This rendezvous is the nave where the people sit. So you come in here. This rendezvous, which overlaps, is the granary. And there's an opening between the section where the people sit and the granary. So you look into the granary, all right? And this rendezvous is the cattle crawl, where the herd of cattle, which belongs to the church as well as families, church has its own gardens and its own herd of cattle at the development center, where the cattle are. And you look into the cattle crawl. So the seeds are kept in the granary as well as the produce that's taken in. And the cattle and the people are all in church. It's that African cosmology that if you want to be in the presence of God, you are in the presence of God amidst all creation. So all creation has got to be inside the church as well as outside. Now, no European missionary would have thought of that church, that other one. Yeah. Maybe, but not that one.
How large are those each?
Well, they're about the. Let's see. I wonder if the dimensions are given on there. I think they are. I think the dimensions are on here. 1,000. Well, I've got numbers here, but I don't understand exactly what they mean. Maybe we can figure it out afterwards. But it says 150 total persons in the church. So that'll tell you.
Okay.
That'll tell you that. Now, what else you need to know here is that the altar is right there where the three overlap. Now, traditionally in Christianity, the altar is placed at the axis mundi, the center of the earth. That's a way of saying this is the most important place. So that's what that represents. So the altar is where the three of them overlap. And there's a tank right back here. A big tank of water. And the water is for the gardens, and the water is for the cattle, and the water is for baptism. These are the waters of life. And the waters of life and baptism are the same waters that water the gardens and slake the thirst of our cattle, and the same waters that are running the streams. Okay, so that's a little bit from the Kanya program. Now let me just show you a couple of things from the All African Council of our Earthkeeping Churches. A few of these photographs, if you want to good close-up look, are in the essay, photographic essay on the sun, in the dining room. You can get a closer look. Oops, certainly get a better one than that. African Association of Earthkeeping Churches reclaiming the lost land, reclothing the earth. I love that mm-hmm. phrase of reclothing the earth. Oh, this was a worship where I couldn't hang up my gift to him. And you can see the traditional emphasis on African culture. So you got lots of percussion, lots of singing, and then you have a lot of preaching. But it's two people stand up, and one of them reads a verse or several of scripture, and then the second homilist then comments on that, and then you sing some more and dance some more. And on it goes. But the men sit on one side, and the women sit on the other side. And they're just now broaching the question of whether women should be ordained. The women are extremely active in Zircon and in the program there. And if you want to talk a little later about what they're doing, I'm happy to answer that question. But just another picture from the worship. African Association of Earthkeeping Churches, and then you see in the logo, you see an African planting, a tree. Do you see that? Yeah. It's actually a male bias here, because if your picture of an African farmer is a man, change it. African farmers are women. The men do take care of the cattle and the animals, but it's the women who do most of the work with respect to raising and processing food. So the real farmers are that. Now, what you can't read at the bottom of that logo is Colossians 1:17, in Christ all things hold together. Mm. Theirs is a cosmic Christology in which you understand all of creation in Jesus Christ, and that's from the Corinthian passage. I wanted to read you, if I can grab it here, having looked at these pictures of all of these wonderful billowing cloths and color, this little piece about these congregations written by one of the members. Heeding earthkeepers' call, they came. Black multitudes, churches of the poor. Billowed swirl of garments, red, white, blue, resplendent green, armed with holy staves and cardboard crowns. Cursed descendants of the house of Ham, rejects of white mission, these lift the fallen banner of spirit, kingdom's cornerstone, where souls of people green leaves meet. Isn't that a lovely picture of your soul? It's a green leaf. And this is where the souls of people meet. Rejects of white mission, lifting the fallen banner of spirit. What else have we got? Zircon, this is one of the nurseries. Zircon trees, they're doing more than afforestation, although that's a big undertaking. This year the goal was to plant 1 million trees in this southern province. And it's just one province. Although I neglected to say that this is the largest, in terms of numbers of people, environmental movement in southern Africa, this particular one in Zimbabwe. Now, here is one of the nurseries. The nurseries are located mostly in the villages, and the villages decide what species to plant. What do they need? And how many of the trees do they plant? And then they collect and save the seeds and start the seedlings and so on. And what I want to point out is on the sign here it says the Muchakata Nursery. Muchakata is wild oak, a cork, excuse me, not oak. the Muchakata Nursery to promote the greening of Africa, human relations, and interfaith dialogue. Mm. Human relations means that this is all for kind of community uplift and our well-being and the community. And interfaith dialogue means that working together with Aztrek. Just an example of how tough it is. Those are the granite hills of southern Zimbabwe. And how to make a go of it on that land rather than the rolling hills, low hills, of the commercial lands for tobacco and wheat and other things. So the communal lands are not good. That's one of the granary and one of the villages. It's also make good use of the granite in there. It's pretty sturdy. Okay, I think the rest are pictures of people and theological education and so on. But I want to leave the rest of the time for what discussions and questions you have. Thanks, Bill. So, comments, questions? Yeah.
Larry, you asked a rhetorical question of the, or maybe a statement. No Western architect would ever have thought that design. It occurs to me that an element, or if you want to designate it, one of the renewal movements in the Western church in our country is the retreat movement.
Yes.
In which you move out of the walls and into the country and places like Holden.
Yeah.
So that it's separated.
Yeah.
The thing.
Yeah.
Here it's brought together.
Camp. Bible camp.
Yeah.
We've never lost that sense of God, the presence of God in creation and camping.
Right.
You know, and in a lot of hymnody and in quite a bit of art. Mm-hmm. It's been mostly in the formal belief. In the theology, it hasn't been totally lost in these traditions. Otherwise, you can sing all sorts of good Swedish hymns that are just full of pictures of nature. But that's a minority report, and it's a counter stream, and it never really determines the architecture, for example.
If you try to take some retreats. Survey of people's sense of. Renewal and growth in the spirit, there would probably be more who identified a retreat or a camp or something else than it would be Sunday school.
Yes, yes. I said no Western. That has to be qualified, first of all, but especially has to be qualified in time. No, I would say no Western. Architect, church architect, sort of on this side of the Industrial Revolution. Because there's a whole lot in Christian European traditions prior to that, in which there's a very strong sense of the presence of the whole community of creation. And it gets, that's being renewed in some places now. It's a little romantic, I must say. But down the street from where I live at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, on the first Sunday of October, the Feast of St. Francis, everybody comes to church, including the camels and the elephants from the Bronx Zoo. I mean, they come down the center aisle at communion time. Now, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine is the largest Catholic cathedral in the world. Now, you have to line up. Because so many people want to go to your church if you're from that cathedral. You got to get a ticket to go to church on that Sunday. They all these crusty, hardened New Yorkers, you know, bring their pets to church that Sunday. And I wish I had brought the video on healing the earth, because it shows the procession of animals down the aisle, and it shows people with tears running down their faces as they watch this. And then you see the liturgical dancers from the Omega Dance Company swaying up there, and the elephant is going just like this, right to the music. So this kind of sense of community and communion comes through. There's also the, you know, the guy, the pooper scooper, that's following, standing at attention too. So it, one must take this into account. But my favorite picture, we took our, we had a French poodle at the time. Her name was Gloria in Excelsis Deo Steinum Rasmussen. My wife insisted on Gloria Steinem, and I thought there should be something doxological in there, so I thought Gloria in Excelsis Deo. So we compromised and named her that. We called her Glo, incidentally. So we took her to church for that Sunday, and the lovely picture was Paul Moore, who is a suffragan bishop. And Paul Moore stands 6'7". Now, when you put a mitre on top of a 6'7", I mean, you're getting up there, you know? So Paul Moore leads this procession of the animals through the great brass doors are open. They only get opened a few times during the year, and this is one of them. Great brass doors for this big procession down the center aisle. It's as long as a football field. And you think that, you see Paul Moore, and you think that he's actually leading this. But from his staff, there's a leash that goes out there. And who's out front but a little Yorkshire Terrier with his nose up in the air, looking for all the world like an English bishop. Just striding right on front. It's quite an unforgettable scene. But, I mean, that's the kind of romantic take on this. But it does tell you that the folks who come there know that something is missing in church when the rest of creation isn't present. I mean, we're all put together in our genes to be at one with the rest of these creatures as kin. And that's why the tears were rolling down people's cheeks when they saw the other critters coming to church.
In addition to a nursery, we'll have to start building a stable.
Yeah.
But it all started in a manger.
That's right. Talking about stable.
How are the mission church people in Zimbabwe and that area reacting to or cooperating with, or what are they doing with this movement?
Good question. Not a good report on that, and there's a lot of support for rural development, community self-help projects. So they want to be in on that. So Zircon's getting a lot of villagers who come and say, "How do we do this now?" So in that sense, the churches and other groups are very supportive of this earthkeeping call as the mission of the church. And sometimes these folks get a little nasty. I personally don't agree with them because they've started now getting so tough on the rules that they threaten to excommunicate people who chop down trees. I'm not one in favor of excommunication under most circumstances, but that'll tell you how serious they are about this. Now, in South Africa, in the Kanya program, the Kanya program hasn't gotten much support from the other churches. It's a Methodist program, and it tries to get support there, and they have been supportive. But it's because of a sense that the African independent churches, rural peasants, low levels of education, really are not the teachers of the Roman Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran, Presbyterian churches. There's a kind of disdain about the African independent churches and all their wild ways. Now that's part of the picture. That's not the whole picture, and I don't want to paint something that's too stark, because at the same time, the African independent churches are eager for theological education, and they now have become part of consortia of schools, and now they're sending their people to the seminaries of the other churches who are working more ecumenically. But there still is this sense that, what do they have to teach us? You know, it's been so much the other way around. We bring the message to them, including the message of rural development.
Yeah.
That it's hard to reverse or to be considered equal or to consider it a real reciprocal relationship. That is changing, but this business of being earthkeeping churches as central to the church's mission hasn't caught on outside of this group. Their closest allies are other non-governmental organizations in the environmental movement.
You mean like Oxfam?
Yeah, or even totally secular organizations.
Sierra Club.
No, not Sierra, because Sierra Club isn't into this world sort of thing.
World Wildlife Fund.
Yeah, the World Wildlife Fund is working with these folks. That's a very interesting project. They're trying to convince the white commercial farmers regaining the lost lands and the adjoining black communal lands to form a kind of green belt, take down the fences between them, so that the wildlife can flourish there. And then these folks are interested in getting the tourists to come and see the wildlife, you know, aid that way. I don't know what's going to happen to this, because this whole land issue is so tough. I sat there with Bishop Miranda and three young Zimbabweans at lunch, and the old man was a guerrilla himself in the War of Independence, one of the sons of the soil. And he says, it probably won't happen in my lifetime, but it will in yours. There'll be another war over the land. It may happen in his lifetime. Not so sure he was right about the date. Yeah. Okay. The bell tolls for us pretty soon.
When the cord arrives. Will there be a chance for all of us to see the pictures from previous sessions?
Sure.
Projected?
Yeah.
Just stay next week.
Yeah, we ought to do it like 9 o'clock in a forum or something and see them all.
Yeah.
Straight to them.
When the cord arrives, it sounds like Jesus is coming soon.
That's right. With the cord.
The golden roll.
Yeah.
The golden roll is coming.
Thank you, everybody. I'll be glad to talk to whoever wants to.
It'll be the third coming, right?
Yeah.
One more.
We can only hope this is the one.
Why are my computer shut down?
Oh, I don't know.
It's been there.
Please wait.
Oh, it's been that way for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Well, I'll boot it up.
You can just do it.
I'll boot it up.
Did you ever
risk
the way
of
when he was first going to Tuesdays to take his class, he was
and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones underneath his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it only where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built the wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, or to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top, in each hand, like an old stone savage, armed. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. I guess we're probably out of time with that, so if you have a quick comment, you can tell me something. I make a quick advertisement. I've got some books here, some Robert Frost, actually some Blake, some Emily Dickinson. And these are these nice little thrift editions. They only cost $1. So if you're interested, I'll get them to the bookstore tomorrow, or you could get them right now, right out of the box, if you're interested in some poetry. So thank you very much for coming. I always love to get a chance to recite and read some Robert Frost. And I'll see you back tomorrow if you're in the village, and we'll gather some leaves together.